This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Nothing you can say but can't be saved. Nothing you can do but you can learn how to be you in time. It's easy. All you need is love.
Blues are feeling the love. I think TJ Hadley and I all said this months ago, that this team will turn it around. There's this kid Bennington I'm really high on some of my own personal ratings. I'd been to San Antonio a couple times to scout him, and I said, this is coming.
Yep.
And now it's 7 wins in a row for the St. Louis Blues. Tonight they're in Arizona to take on the Coyotes, and we check in with Chris Kerber, the voice of the Blues. Kerbs, we can't locate that audio of any of us saying that, but we're going to stick to that story.
I said it. I know we've got it on tape somewhere. So,
okay.
I'm confident. Yeah, it's amazing how everybody said that, right?
Right. In hindsight, yeah, it's like the Monday Night Miracle. We were all there. I actually was there. My friends wanted to leave. So, mindset going.
Well, you know what? Actually, what was said though? I mean, the one thing that we were consistent with on the air was the fact that this team had avoided long losing streaks. And if you looked at the standings and you looked at the games in hand and you looked at how they were playing against some of the top teams in the league, you're going, okay, if they can get it together, there is a chance, you know, for a run here, because those games in hand kind of had the, I mean, at one point they were like 5 or 6 fewer games than, say, the Vancouver Canucks were ahead of them. So, you know, fortunately, they were able to do it. Now, there's still a ton of work to do here. So this one, the Coyotes beat the Blues 6-1 the last time they were in here. So, you know, if they take this lightly, they could get it drumming tonight.
And if you look in the rearview mirror, the Blues have made up a lot of ground, obviously, but Arizona, Colorado, Minnesota, a couple of teams that are all right there, and those are the three teams they're going to face on this road trip over the next few days or so. So, again, to your point, it's been a great run, but these are big games because those teams are ones that are kind of nipping at your heels.
Well, it took that kind of a run to get back in it. Now you've got to maintain some of it to stay ahead. The good news is they did create some separation between a couple of those teams below them in the standings. So it's not just 1 point in some cases. It's 4, it's 5 points. And so with as well as the Blues have been playing, they've given themselves a tad of a cushion here. But what really is amazing to me, and how many times – you know, when you've got a team battling for a playoff spot in any sport, okay, you may need some help here, you may need some help there. My goodness, have they gotten a ton of help just about everywhere. And then you look at even the schedule tonight. Colorado's going to be playing at Tampa. I mean, and Dallas is going to be playing at Tampa. Colorado is going to be playing against Winnipeg. I mean, so once again, there could be some help coming from some out-of-town scores for the Blues if they can keep this win streak going against the Coyotes team. But yeah, you still have some work to do. Look, when you're talking about 27, 28 games to go in your regular season, that's a third of the year. So there's a lot of hockey left.
And Kerbs, I guess we're at the point we don't need to ask anymore. It's, you know, Bennington plays basically every night. Jake would play Sunday in Minnesota. Is that what you would expect?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one. One thought I had, based on practice yesterday, there were no changes. Thanks for the update from Chris Pinkert on that for me, but based on practice yesterday, there were no changes to the lineup. The only guy was Robbie Favre, was skating for Alexander Steen. His wife, Josefina, is expecting a baby just about any time. So so he wasn't at practice, but he is on the trip, and I expect him in the lineup based on the roster that we've seen. However, Bennington will go tonight. Now, you've got the scenario here where you've got Colorado and then you've got Minnesota. Okay, Colorado's on the outside looking in. Minnesota's in right now in the other wild card spot. It wouldn't surprise me to say, okay, Jake has the experience of playing in the altitude in Colorado. Maybe you play him there. But the flip side of that, to your point, with starting Jake on Sunday, and they're both afternoon games at 1 o'clock, as Sunday's game is part of NBC's Hockey Day in America broadcasts, Jake has been doggone fantastic in Minnesota. I mean, he has been terrific against that team and in Minnesota especially. So based on those numbers, I would kind of agree with you to think that unless there's a hiccup tonight, it's Bennington the next two, then Jake in Minnesota.
Kerbs, What do you expect to happen when David Perron gets healthy? I think a lot of people are surprised that he's been out as long as he has, and during this time, these lines have really meshed. I've heard people throw around Pat Maroon's name, but he's been a physical presence, a guy that hasn't taken any crap from anybody. Zach Samford may be a guy. When he's back, but I think before he went out, he was probably your second-best player through the first part of the season here. Who would he be replacing?
Well, I guess Martin will appreciate this. I'll grab a line from Larry Plo. You may not have to worry about it. I mean, with the busiest schedule as the St. Louis Blues have had, that decision could be simply made based on injuries. But, you know, I guess for the fun of the question, if I have no idea. I look at it right now, and I honestly think that you've got an opportunity to give Alexander Steen a rest. So I could see that happening. The easy decision is you make a couple of shifts and somebody goes in for Mackenzie McEachern. But the speed that they put on that line with the way Robert Thomas has been playing has really created some good chemistry. So, one, yes, you are going to find room in the lineup for him. Two, it may be decided because another guy, you know, here or there gets nicked up. But to me, it's an opportunity to maybe rest Alexander Steen for a game or two. And then you can start spelling some of the fourth, you know, Mackenzie McEachern, that kind of stuff when that happens. But the good news is when you're playing this well, it's fun to at least to have to make those kind of decisions.
And Curbs, I know we have hardcore hockey talk, but give me the background on this Laura Brannigan, the glory. What did I miss here?
I have no idea. I really don't. Actually, until I checked it out on iTunes, I didn't even know she had a greatest hits album. So what happened is, you know, they play some music in the locker room after a game, and Jimmy Thomas went in the locker room at one point, and they were playing Gloria and Laura Brannigan, and when he asked about it, you know, Ryan O'Reilly said, "Oh, we got some old souls in here," and so it just kind of took off from there, you know, and that's what they were playing. They at one point, last road trip, they were blasting it on the plane at some point, and, you know, it's really kind of interesting, Martin, is the vibe of a team. And I'll go back a couple years ago, the year that the Blues went on that huge run to the conference finals. They rallied, I wouldn't say they rallied around Hitch. They almost rallied against him. We were on a trip from I think it was Buffalo to Pittsburgh. And we landed in Pittsburgh, and everybody's on one bus. It was an NBC game, so there was no extra media, and the TV guys weren't on a trip. And guys start blasting a song in the back of the bus, and, you know, and we're singing it towards Hitch. I mean, it was something else. And it was like a blank year song, really. I mean, I'm telling you, it was something else to hear. But it was funny as all get out. And then on the plane, you got Scotty Upshaw. He plays some music, and he keeps things light. We hadn't heard any of that this year. Yeah, I mean, none of it until probably the last few weeks. And I think part of the reason was I don't think anybody was really, as the team wasn't playing well, so except for Ryan O'Reilly, no one was really playing well enough where I think they felt they could relax. And yet maybe that's what they needed most. Now you get on the plane and somebody's got some iTunes going on their phone and there's music blaring from the locker room and they're rallying around some stuff and having some fun with it. And I think the room and the mood and the feel has definitely lightened up quite a bit, which is helping keep this team loose and exactly where they need to be.
Hey, Curbs, it's interesting of all.
Wait a
seasons.
Minute, I know this voice. Hang on, I'm thinking. I know it.
What is it with
remember.
All these people and, like, just amazing I'm still alive? It's just at least still
common reaction.
Because you're probably a walking petri dish of chemistry experiments.
That is true.
It's amazing of all years, this is the year the Blues could tie the franchise record for their longest winning streak this century. You have to go back to 2000 the last time that they won eight straight. I will say this much. Of all the guys that have surprised me the most of the top-tier players, Bo Meester is probably the guy that surprised me the most over the course of the last month and a half. But this might be as well as I've seen Pietrangelo play in some time, which is very, very encouraging for this team if they, in fact, keep the path going into the playoffs.
Yeah, a couple things, you're right. You got to go all the way back. The last eight-game win streak that the Blues had was part of a nine-game win streak that went from, it was at the beginning of the season. I wrote it down here. It went from games 3-11 from October 15th to November 5th of 2002.
Yeah, I still had hair.
Yeah, and girth. You still have your hair, John. You just outgrew it.
Exactly.
But look, first off, a couple things had to happen if the Blues were going to have a turnaround. And we talked about it plenty with TJ in the afternoon show and with you guys in the morning. The reality of it is your best players are going to have to be your best players, plain and simple. You weren't going to make a run if Alex Pietrangelo isn't playing as a top defenseman, if Vladimir Tarasenko wasn't scoring and playing as a top forward. And in the first month and a half of the season, your two worst defensemen were Pietrangelo and Bolmeister. Right? And now it took Jay a while to get into condition and really feeling better after that hip surgery, which is not an easy surgery to come back from and play at that level at the age of 35. But he did, and he was able. So Alex Pietrangelo was playing real well. I still think there's some decisions that he's got to make better decisions sometimes in front of his net. Colton Parayko, for example, I think has been extraordinarily good in front of the St. Louis Blues net. There's an awareness where if he's about to go chase somebody in the corner, he looks and there's nobody stationed in front of the net. He just stays there, you know. And I think sometimes we saw, even as well as Gunnarsson and Pietrangelo played, sometimes those two got wandering around a little bit more. So the fact that you got Edmondson posted up with him now on that pairing has worked out really well. Joel's game has come back and played extremely well. And so your best players had to be your best players. I mean, Alex Pietrangelo had to start playing as a top defenseman. A few years back, he was in, you know, Norris consideration. And Alex Pietrangelo, look, he's not going to get to 60, 70 points. He can get to 60, but he's not going to get to 70 points, 75 points, you know, like maybe Carlson, like Subban did, like Burns did. And apparently, you know, the Norris Trophy has come down to who gets more points as a defenseman. It doesn't mean you're best defenseman anymore. You know, but Alex Pietrangelo has the talent as a world-class defenseman that he should be in the Norris conversation. And he hasn't been. And he's got to find a way to get back into it because he has the talent to do it. And I think part of that is I think he's got to make better decisions on the power play. He's got to move the puck quicker. He's got to shoot the puck quicker. And if he gets some more production on the power play, that's going to open up. People are going to start recognizing his numbers a little bit more because he is a better defender than Carlson. He's a better defender than Burns. He's a better defender than Subban. And those are guys that recently won, you know, Norris trophies. You know, so he just doesn't have the points. So the reality of it is he has to play and should play and has the ability to play to where he could be in the conversation for a Norris Trophy. And there's another level to his game yet, even despite the fact that I think he's been playing well.
Curves, there are two guys that I think are seen as pretty passive dispositionally. That Vladimir Tarasenko and Colton Parayko. I think people would, at least laid back, not the in-your-face type of personalities. But both guys, I think, have shown something a little bit different compared to what we've seen. I was at the game on Saturday against Nashville. Colton Parayko seems to have taken a little bit more of a leadership role on this team, certainly through communication. The play where he fell back, you'll probably remember the play. He was back, and somehow they got an odd man rush. He's barking at somebody on his own team to cover the guy that's crashing the net while he goes, and he ends up sliding on his stomach to poke away the puck. I've seen more of that out of him, and then we've seen some fire out of Vladimir Tarasenko recently, picking fights with P.K. Subban. He's gone on this goal streak. But every time the camera pans over to him, he's mother-effing somebody, and that's sort of out of character for the Tarasenko that we've seen over the last few years.
Well, we've seen just so long he's doing that to the other team.
I knew that was coming.
Well, and I'm serious here because sometimes what you've seen from him in the past is some of those facial expressions and stuff towards his own teammates and some frustration there, and you know, rather than leading on there. And so I think in the last few weeks he's done a great job with that, and he's feeling better because he's scoring some goals too. But Vladimir Tarasenko has to play with passion. He's got to play with a little fire in his belly. And, guys, you know he can shoot the puck. You know he can score. So, you know, we can talk with Craig Berube about him shooting the puck quicker, him getting chances, different things like that. As cliche as it is, when you see him hauling butt back and stick-checking the puck away in Tampa in overtime, what probably could have been a game-winning shot from the Lightning, and it turns into a transition play that leads to the game-winning goal from Braden Schenn, okay, that's when you know Vladimir Tarasenko is going to go. I mean, when he carries wide and then gets those tree trunks of legs moving, and they're powerful to skate the puck into the front of the net area, like he did on the game-winning goal against Nashville, he has the speed. He has the ability, you know, and he can catch people. And when he's doing that, he's engaged, and other players on the team go, holy cow, the big boy's moving. And when there he starts moving, others start moving. It's just simply leadership by example, and I'm glad to see it. Now, I want to see it for even a longer period of time, to be honest with you. I mean, he's got some work to do. He's got some goal scoring to do, you know, based on the start of his season. So, I want to see that kind of effort continue. And as for Parayko, you know, Colton's just hitting, maybe tonight, I don't have my game notes in front of me, but tonight or tomorrow, one of these next couple of games, he's hitting the 300-game plateau. If you talk to Al MacInnis, you talk to other guys around the league, you talk to general managers, a lot of them will tell you, you may not know what you have in an NHL defenseman until they really get to that 250, 300-game plateau. He's not even done with year four in the league. And I'll go back and I'll look. As good as the Nashville Predators look with Roman Josi and Dan Ellis as a pairing, both of those guys are in their eighth season in the National Hockey League. Look at Carlson. Carlson's getting Norris Trophy consideration with the Washington Capitals. And if you talk to Todd Reirden, who played in St. Louis with Chris Pronger the year that Pronger won his Norris and his MVP, Todd Reirden will tell you about a transition where they talked about just building blocks to Carlson's game to get him here and how it took several years to do it. Colton Parayko is a terrific talent. He's a terrific defenseman, and he's going to continue to grow. And then if they ever decide to put him out on that doggone power play and then actually get the philosophy to run the power play through his shot, I think you're going to see even more production from the guy. So Colton has been doing terrifically and continues to grow in his position and in his role. And everybody I've talked to over the years, John, you've heard it, Martin, you've heard it, TJ, the hardest position to develop in the NHL is defenseman. It just takes time. And Colton's still coming into his own.
Chris, when Craig Berube took over, I think we all knew very little about the man. Now, here we are 3 months later, and I think we know very little about the man. I kind of look at him the way Hitch said with Roman Polak, oh, don't open that door. Like, he seems so stoic, clearly has control of this team right now. Do you ever see him, when he loses his cool, is it always behind closed doors? Does he let him have it on the ice during a morning skate? I just don't see him revealing much, whether it's in an interview or standing on the bench. He just seems to be so stoic.
He is not a man of many words, and that's always been the case for him. As a player, he was an amazing teammate. He battled for his teammates. I mean, he's one of the all-time penaltymen of leaders in the NHL. And he's always just kind of been that way, very matter of fact. And when I started doing my coaches' interviews with him, you know, and you got to learn, okay, different coaches, different styles, some questions, some could have fun with, some are more straightforward. And I'm kind of finding there's a little bit of mix. Every now and then I can get a laugh out of him. And I looked at him one time, I said, okay, I've got a goal here. And my goal is by the end of this season, I'm going to do a 2.5-minute interview with you where I ask fewer than 7 questions. And he kind of chuckled at it, but he's very straightforward and he's very matter of fact. Look, we had a meeting with him, you know, where the pencils are put away, you know, there's no cameras, there's no recorders there. We meet with him after practices, before games, and so we could get kind of a non-media answer, if you will, on some things. And I mean, at one point we asked about a play and a player, and he goes, "Dumb play, dumb decision, dumb moment, and we got to make sure that guy smartens up," right? I mean, and he goes in and he tells these guys. He goes to Jaden Schwartz during the slump that Jaden's in, and he's like, "You're just going to have to keep working harder," you know. And that's just how he is. But the players are buying into it. And interestingly enough, you know, when he got the job, you go back to the first couple weeks, and there were a couple of optional skates where he was not out on the ice, and you're going, the new interim head coach is not out on the ice, and he was starting to build a culture that he wanted to build, you know, with expectations of his players. And it took a little while. I mean, his first 15 games, I think the team still might have been below 500. So you go and you look at that, and he's getting the buy-in, and he's getting the message through. And it took time. And when you see him sit a guy like Joel Edmondson for 3 games, and he scratches David Perron and all these, you know, he scratched healthy, good players, the message was getting through. In the end, though, good goaltending makes a coach look great. And Jordan Binnington has made Craig Berube look really good. And then the players have in turn responded. But I'll tell you something. I go into the locker room and I talk to guys about him, and they love him. They love playing for him, and he's very direct. For example, I mean, here's Take a guy like Braden Schenn that played for him in Philadelphia. Now he played on the wing for Craig in Philadelphia. Braden would prefer to play center. He likes playing center. He had 77 points last season as a centerman. For whatever reason, it wasn't coming this time through. He finally moved him to the wing. And Craig goes, look, the guy has to play a power forward game. If he doesn't play a power forward game and he thinks he's more skilled than he really is, then his game isn't going to work. So I put him on the wing where he has no choice but to play that style of game because of the way Ryan O'Reilly's playing. And look what Braden Schenn's done. So he's got a really good sense of his team as well.
Curbs, there's something I've noticed, and I'm probably, after looking at the height of the guys, off on this, but I want to ask the question anyway. Jordan Binnington has had, in the last week, three shots go off his shoulder. One hit the post, the other one right back into the net. He's only 6'1". Is that something that has anything to do with his height? Jake Allen's, it's not something you typically notice with him, but as I look at it, he's only 6'2". Has it got anything to do with the dimensions of a player and just something you live with?
There are sometimes, believe it or not, that Ben Bush Bishop, who is the tallest goaltender in the National Hockey League and the tallest goaltender to have played in the NHL, can look small. And sometimes what happens is when everybody, all these goaltenders drop down and then they basically cover the ice. So stand-up goaltenders don't exist anymore. That butterfly has taken over the game. And sometimes what happens is when that puck ends up in front of the net, if they lean forward a little bit, it opens up above them. And you could be 6'5", you could be 6'8", and you lean forward, and these guys have the ability to snipe it over your shoulder. The thing that saves Jordan Binnington on that is if you're slightly smaller and you're playing deeper in the net, those holes get bigger. Jordan challenges out at the top of the crease to take angles away, and that makes a big difference for him. So sometimes it's just the way he's leaning. You know, I think you maybe in the games that he started. So he started 12 games. He's 10-1-1. Man, I know of one, maybe two goals that you go, you know, how many times you go, the goalie would like to have them all back. But when we say a goalie would like to have it back, that's when we're kind of blaming the goaltender for not playing that one very well. I think there may be only one real goal where you could say that about what he's, the goals he's given up. It's pretty amazing.
Curbs, thanks for the time. Enjoy Arizona. And next time we talk to you, there'll be three games in the books. Arizona tonight, then you have, of course, Colorado Saturday, Minnesota Sunday. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, you got it, guys. Yeah, and after that Minnesota game, you're down to 24 games remaining, 12 at home, 12 on the road. So it looks like everything becomes even Steven at that point.
Chris Kerber live from Arizona. All right, Curbs, have a good trip.
All right, guys, take care.
Chris Kerber is brought to us by Petromart. Petromart, locally owned and operated family business that's been serving the St. Louis area for over 30 years. Each location just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next. With 50 locations to serve you, if you're in a hurry, Petromart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items like hot and ready pizza, fresh fruit, salads. Petromart has something for everybody. It's always prepared fresh, available around the clock. Petromart, a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline and proud sponsor of the St. Louis Blues. Hollywood Casino, title sponsor for the Press Box. Bomarito Automotive brings you the content of this show. More information at bomarito.com. And Dr. Michael Jones, longtime sponsor.
855-260-EYES, professional ophthalmologist, board certified, and assistant professor at SLU. And Martin, before we wrap up, I want to mention in February, it's a union stimulus program.